From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. June is Dairy Month in Wisconsin, and a former Crawford County farmer, entrepreneur, and author is out with a book about the dairy state's history. It helps explain how and why the dairy cow rose and sustained such prominence in state agriculture. Ed Janis was briefly a dairy farmer in the 1970s in Crawford County before economics and the fact that the city boy really didn't know much about farming forced him out of the industry. Still, he's always had a great reverence for dairy farmers, which is a big reason he wrote Creating Dairyland. Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Roysom recently talked about the book with Janis.
I fell in love with dairy farming. I really, really liked our neighbors. I liked what they did. I liked the way they thought. And that was one of the surprising things to me was how, I say they're very intellectual, how intellectual the farmers were, how much they studied and improved. So I was very impressed by them. I loved the cows, of course, and all the sort of, I guess, miracles that seemed to happen on dairy farms. But, you know, I put that away in back pocket and went on with my life and had a family and did all sorts of things. You know, I started Capital Brewing Company. I started the Madison Muskies. And then some years later, I got into being a writer and a journalist. And later on, I got a commission from the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board to do some stories on modern dairy farmers. And so I ran around the state with my little microphone and had a wonderful time, and the book is an outgrowth of just how impressed I continue to be with dairy farmers.
And when you say that, I want to bring in this question. It certainly isn't a straightforward, just the facts, ma'am, sort of story. You definitely have an affection for it. Why write that way as compared to just being somebody who's neutral, the standard cold journalist type sort of thing? You write very poetically, very lyrical, I might say.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I guess it's just genetic or something. I can't help myself, Steve. That's just the way I talk. It's the way I think. And I've never been a big fan. I did not go further than a bachelor's in anthropology because I wasn't that excited about academics and that kind of neutral writing that you talk about. I think that there is, as I like to say, a sort of mind of history. And, of course, everyone I interview has a mind. And so my idea is to sort of unlock that mind, to show people how this really works. And so I need to share my own mind with people. And I guess that's it. I mean, I've had a lot of experiences that draw me to that kind of writing.
How did Wisconsin become a dairy state? I know the book is, of many things, it is a history. And you mention a big bang, if you will. Talk about that and how it started things off.
Sure. Let me set the stage, okay? So around the time of statehood, let's say around the 1850s all the way up into the 1870s, Wisconsin was the virgin West. We don't think of it. You know, we think it's very settled and, you know, it's been here a long time. But in the 1850s, Yankee farmers were coming out to exploit the land. And I must say they were hugely successful at exploiting the land, just like our ancestors did as they moved ever westward. We were the West. And they planted lots of wheat. They made lots of money. And then all of a sudden, things fell apart because the land was being shipped to England, is what they said. So you would grow your wheat and ship the flour to England, and then no nutrients were put back in the soil. Farmers became kind of irresponsible. They became sort of lovers of money. They wanted quick buck. And almost ruined our state. I like to say they ruined our state sort of in the economic sense of economic virtue. The land itself had become very, very poor. And dairying, and as I call it, the gospel of dairying, was the first sustainability movement. The leaders of the dairy movement wanted to rebuild everything, especially the soil, but also the sort of morality of our farmers, which, as they say, had become pretty suspect there for a while. So Wisconsin was in a fairly dire state at that point, and these dairy missionaries thought that the cow was the way to rebuild for the future. So that's the big bang. All of a sudden, around 1870, Wisconsin dairy farmers, under a great deal of protest, I might add, began to look into being dairy farmers. I'm sorry, Wisconsin farmers began to look into being dairy farmers. It was a very slow process. But around 1870, it started taking off, and people started seeing that the cow might save the state. And so there was a huge push for it.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Steve Rysom, and we are talking with Ed Janus. He's the author of Creating Dairyland, a sort of a tribute to Wisconsin dairy farmers, among other things, and a history book as well. You have several of recent profiles of some dairy farmers in the state. You kind of tie it into a kind of a historical perspective. Deeper soil is the way you word
yes.
it.
Right.
Give me a couple of profiles on how that worked.
Okay, let me do my best here. I'll give you an example, one story of the Crave brothers. They have a farm out in Waterloo, Wisconsin, a very flat area near Madison. They were sort of typical small farmers during the 1950s. That is the father of the family today. But progressives. And that means they were kind of bitten by this idea that farmers' lives could improve if they applied science and business practices, if they were diligent, if they took care of animals, if they took care of their land. But things were very, very difficult, again, in the 1960s and 70s. And the father of the present-day Crave brothers had to quit farming. So they older brothers got together and they decided they weren't going to quit and they were going to become even more progressive. In other words, they weren't going to go backwards. They weren't going to quit farming. And so they were really imbued with what we think of in Wisconsin, what I call the Wisconsin idea of dairying. So what did they do? They went to college. They got all the new technology. They started being very, very diligent about breeding their cattle more carefully. And all those things that we associate with progressive dairying are also associated with the progressive movement in Wisconsin. So this is fascinating to me. So here are these guys. They're hugely successful today, by the way. Very, very successful. And the reason is because they were imbued with this progressive spirit from the past, the same spirit that the founder of dairying, the former governor, W.D. Horde, professed. Also, another interesting thing about the Crave brothers and a number of other farmers today is that they opened their own cheese factory. Because, you see, dairying is a commodity form of farming, and it's very hard to get a better price for your work, your labor, your capital than just, you know, bulk milk prices. So farmers have always looked for ways to make more money out of their milk. Well, cheese has always been one of those ways. And, of course, we're all familiar with these now defunct but romantic little cheese factories in every little crossroads in the state. Well, that's coming back. And for the same reasons that it was originally developed, so that farmers could make more money. So those are two examples of how present-day history grows out of the same impulses from the past.
Sounds almost cyclical.
Well, you know, I think that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I think these things are real, and so they continue to push their heads up all the time because that's the way things are structured.
Is there a distinct Wisconsin idea of dairying that is perhaps different from Minnesota and Iowa and such? I mean, is there a different philosophy when we cross state lines?
That's really interesting. I don't know the answer to that completely. I will say the one thing that distinguishes Wisconsin's dairy industry is that it's huge, that it's really the state's industry. In Minnesota, they have plenty of dairy farmers. They're very good dairy farmers. Iowa has a lot of dairy farmers. But in neither of those two states is it dairyland. So we have this incredible infrastructure of dairying, the cheese factories, the expertise, the university, I think that really makes us different. And in the beginning of all of this, I think there was a huge difference, let's say at least between Iowa and Wisconsin, and that is this progressive idea. Again, W.D. Horde, Dr. Henry at the university, and this Wisconsin idea took off in Wisconsin like no other place. We're the birthplace, after all, the progressive movement. And that, surprisingly and remarkably, became part of the skeleton of our dairy industry.
Why do you think Wisconsin has such a strong dairy industry, while California, which I guess, what is it, metaphorically, you could say is our older brother or older sister, is number one?
Yeah. Well, not older brother. They're our younger brother, of course. But
okay.
But they grew up.
You're doing history. You bet.
But they're fatter than we are.
That works. We'll
go
with that.
I know what you mean. They're bigger than we are. Well, I don't know what to say. Wisconsin's a small place. The weather, although it used to be ideal for dairying, it's why we became the world leader in dairying, is because of the conditions in Wisconsin. But in the modern era, they're somewhat less conducive, I think, to this kind of mass dairy farm that you see in California, that you see in New Zealand and places like that. So Wisconsin just had a sort of idea that you couldn't get too large, and that the terrain doesn't allow getting too large. The weather, of course, you can't graze your cattle all winter as you can out in California. So things like that have conspired to keep us, you know, a very healthy dairy industry, but not the biggest. We don't need to be the biggest.
This is WPR's Newsmakers. I'm Steve Reisom. My guest is Ed Janis. He's the author of Creating Dairyland, A Tribute to Wisconsin Dairy Farmers. And we've been talking dairy history in the state and how we became a dairy heavyweight, if you will. Mm-hmm. Any other profiles in the book that stood out for you, just for the sake of the stories that they wore?
Yes, indeed. One of my favorite stories is about a farmer who is now long deceased, long dead. This is the story that his daughter told me. And as I say in the book, this is a story that is the most typical dairy story. We look around, you know, we see these thriving farms, these beautiful homesteads and so on, and we think, oh, you know, everybody loves dairying, everybody's stayed in dairying. But the fact is, most people left it. Many, many, many young people wanted nothing more than to leave the farms. So one of the really big stories about Wisconsin dairying is the people that left. Why did they leave? Under what circumstances? Well, this gentleman named William Seeley, this is during the First World War, went off to war, moved to Chicago, and just fell in love with being in Chicago. He was a city boy, you know. He went to the Cubs games and out on the beach and having a great time. And his mother wrote him a letter and said, "Dad's ill. You got to come back to the farm." Well, this is a very, very common story. It's very sad. As his daughter told me, here was a guy who walked around the farm quoting Longfellow, and yet he had to be a dairy farmer. And this is a dairy farmer in the 1940s and 50s. It was very, very difficult work. So he was a very reluctant farmer. He wanted nothing more than to have his kids leave the farm. And as I say, this is really as much a story of Wisconsin dairying as all those really interesting people that stayed. So that was another a profile that I loved. There was another one. Do you want another one, Steve?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, good. So there's a great family that have been on the land since 1850 up by Cleveland, Wisconsin. And what's remarkable about them is how this continuity of dairy families. What is it that keeps these people on the land year after year, generation after generation? And that's a really interesting question. It's sort of what makes dairy farmers happy, you know? They're human beings, but they also have, you know, other sources of happiness that maybe we in the city lack. So watching cows grazing, getting that milk every evening, things like that. So I asked the question, what has kept them on the land? And the thing is that their farm, after, I don't know, is it five generations or so, has changed. I mean, every generation changes the definition of what progress is. And what was interesting about this family, the Klessigs at the Saxon Homestead Farm, is that they've now gone back to a new form of old dairying, back to grazing. Maybe your listeners are familiar with this new movement towards grass feeding, which farmers always have done, but now it's become much more scientific. So what's been great is the way these farmers have found a way to stay on the land. It's really remarkable, because if they hadn't done that, we wouldn't have this bucolic splendor, you know, that we see when we drive through Dairyland. So it's people like the Klessigs who have constantly worked at transforming their places into places they want to be. And we owe them a debt of gratitude, I think.
And I have noticed in interviews of my own that it's dairy farming is really not a mostly not a bottom line sort of thing. Obviously, that's priority one, but it's lifestyle.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It's very interesting, Steve. The dairy books and the magazines, even from 100 years ago, made that point exactly. In a sense, I talk about a fellow in my book called Cliff Cronig. He's now dead, too. And I said to him one day, say, Cliff, you know, you're a really smart guy, and you could go down to Chicago and make a whole lot of money, you know, in Chicago. And he says, yeah, but I could never buy what I've got here. And I think that's sort of the anthem of Wisconsin dairying, you know. Some of these farmers tell me, many of them, about this sort of miracle when a cow gives a new calf. There's something really, you can't buy that, you know. There's no video game in the world that can give you that thrill. Plus, there are other sort of joys that one gets from being a dairy farmer. As I mentioned earlier, they're very intelligent people for the most part, and they're very interested in improvement. And so we all, as human beings, like to make things better. And dairying gives you a tremendous opportunity to make things better. Tremendous increase in milk production in the last, say, 30 years or so. About 30%, it's estimated, comes about because of better genetics. And that means farmers sitting around a table with these bull catalogs, you know, talking about what bull they're going to breed Bessie to. And that kind of intellectual satisfaction is, I think, just wonderful.
When did you initially do these interviews for the book? About 2006?
I think that's right. Yeah, it's when I was still a child.
You're still a child. Have you talked to farmers lately? Do you get a sense that there's been any sort of change when it comes to optimism? Or lately with recent dairy situations, dairy prices a lack of optimism or a dwindling faith, if you will. Have you come across people like that?
Well, you know, it's like everything else. It's when you ask them, right? So when milk was $16, it was pretty bad. Now that milk is up a little higher, it's not quite so bad. Optimism. I just think these people are very optimistic. They realize that they're going to have to change in order to stay in running and, you know, to stay in place. And a lot of the older farmers, you know, it's time for them to retire as well. And they're disappointed, I think, that it's not going better for them. But the ones who are willing to make these changes, I think, are doing very well. I mean, I think they're very optimistic. I think they're optimistic.
Do you think we'll be a dairy state? I know I'm asking a lot here of you. Do you think we're going to be a dairy state in the next 150 years?
Wow, I've never thought of that. You know, I've never thought of that.
The time of the Jetsons, anyway.
Well, you know, I mean, as long as they're people going to drink milk, right? And the cows have got to live somewhere. They've got to be fed. We have this great rainfall and all the moisture that comes from snow. We've got this incredible grass. We have this great infrastructure. So unless they figure a way to make milk in a test tube, we're going to be a dairy state. Will we be the big dairy state? I just don't know. I mean, there's no way of telling, of course.
Is there anything you think people should know about, and this is organic, non-organic, whatever, there seems to be a gap between the consumers and the producers. Is there any impression, anything from your book that you think people should take away from your book that would give them a better sense as to what goes on a dairy farm?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, a couple of things come to mind right away. The first is that dairying is the archetype of the sustainable agriculture. People need to get that into their minds. Dairying, you know, people use the term factory farm, right? Well, mostly that does not apply to dairy farming, at least in Wisconsin. And this idea that dairy farmers are born in their very bones with the idea of making sure they use as much as they possibly can, that they return as much as they can to the soil, that they take care of animals because it's their source of profit and it's also the things that they love. So people in the cities ought not to think of dairy farmers as they might think of these huge soybean farmers, for example. It's a very, very different thing. These people are so committed to passing on to their children a much better farm. So I think people need to realize that dairying is sustainable. I mean, to the degree that anything in our universe is actually sustainable. So if they give farmers that, if they see that farmers are human beings like they are, that farmers love nature for the most part, I think that can begin to create a dialogue. It's hard for me to imagine how milk could be any more pure than it already is.
Any final thoughts, Ed, before we wrap it up?
No, I guess I would say that people should be, I want to say open-minded, but that's not quite it, that people really should go out and hang out with farmers and ask them about themselves. You know, go on the farm, watch what they really do, ask them why they do it, and this will give them, I think, a tremendous insight into the sort of spiritual core of our state. So that's my recommendation.
Ed Janis is a former Crawford County dairy farmer and the author of the book Creating Dairyland, which explains the history of dairy farming in the Badger State. He was interviewed by Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Roysom. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Strube, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.